Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Growing up on the farm, I didn't have a big brother. And so when I run into troubled times in my adult life, I go to my adopted big brothers, guys like Joel Marion, Bedros Koulian, Matt Smith, and the man you're going to meet today, Jay Ferrugia. Now, Jay lives down in California. He was born in the New Jersey area, and forever, ever since I've known him, he has been an advocate for open-heartedness, open-mindedness, and just being a good guy to everybody that he comes across. And so when the racial unrest and protests began, I knew that I had to have a conversation with Jay to hear his thoughts, and I wanted to share them with you. So the conversation is a little awkward in some spots. I'm not going to lie to you. And they're awkward because of me and the questions that I ask. But Jay is smooth. Jay has some great wisdom. Jay admits when he doesn't know the answers. And I think you're going to get a lot out of this, especially if you're struggling to have some conversations with people around you. So welcome to Early to Rise Radio. This is Craig Valentine, and I want to get into the show with my friend, Jay Ferrugia, who's going to teach us a lot about personal development and in the ways that we can go and make the world a better place. All right, let's jump into this. And I really look forward to sharing this with you. Jay, welcome back to the show, my man. This is going to be awesome. I'm really excited to get your insights and wisdom on what's going on in the world, my man.
Thank you so much.
It's great. I look up to you like a big brother. You are the big brother I never had because you are worldly, my man. You are worldly and always the guy to go for wisdom. And so that's why, you know, I wouldn't say I hit you up in a panic, but it was definitely, I was struggling with how to make sense of a lot of things going on, you know, a lot of the social unrest down in America. And I know that you were the type of guy who's been navigating this for so many years. So it'd be okay if I ask you a few questions about that, my man?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So, you know, in some of the posts you've been talking, you know, that I've seen you do, and also just knowing you, I've known that you've kind of lived this attitude forever of, you know, and I think there was something in one of your stories where you were like, yes, I've been saying this forever. And it was about, you know, educating people to understand one another or something. Do you remember that story post that you did?
I can't remember 100%, but vaguely, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And so like you have been living this forever, and, you know, you grew up in Jersey where, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people like you, but there's a lot of people that are unlike you in their attitudes towards everybody. Like you're open to everybody. So what was it? What were some of the moments that led you to this way of thinking of being open to everybody, you know, from the early, you know, from when you were just a kid?
My mom marched and protested in the 60s. And I remember her as a kid when adults would say any racist comment, and she would immediately snap, be like, nope, we don't allow that in this house. That's not how people talk. She said that to kids. She said that to adults. And so I always just knew from day one, like, okay, that's wrong. Don't do that. Treat everybody equally. And I still remember the little boy's name. And I can't remember the little girl's name, but I remember when he called her the N-word when I was little. And I remember freaking out and coming home to my mom, be like, what's up with that? What's going on? You know? And so that was kind of just always a thing for me. And you know, being raised like that, and the first time I got into music, you know, she bought me my first Run DMC tape in 1984, and took me to see Public Enemy at St. John's University, even though we were the only white people there in 1988. And, you know, so many things like that, and took me to see Do the Right Thing in 1989. Like, and then in college, I've told this story a million times before, we had zero white friends. The only white person we knew was White Chris. And
you were at Arizona State or something like
well,
that?
Well, so first I was at Towson. So what happened was I was at Towson State, and the two first friends.
Oh, in Maryland, right?
Yeah. During orientation, I met two friends. They were black and Spanish. All their friends become my friends, and all their friends were black. So for the next few years, we just always hung out with black people. I don't know. It was just that was the deal. It was every Friday night at the Black Student Union. And then when I transferred to Arizona State, I got put in the African-American studies floor. So then I had no white friends again. So I've lived with Black people. I love Black people. I've dated Black girls. I've had, you know, so for my whole life. And I've been outspoken against racism for as long as you can remember. Online, I put in my stories 52 weeks a year. I'll post, you know, the Malcolm X and Dr. King on the wall right behind me there. I have a Public Enemy tattooed on my forearm. That's always been something that has been just, you know, something that I've been super passionate about and trying to help out, trying to educate, trying to be anti-racist. So it hit me really hard. Really hard when all that stuff went down the last couple of weeks. And I was just super bummed and frustrated. And it took me a while to get out of it.
Now, what would you say is different about this time?
I just think finally, I mean, I never would have thought that we'd see that many people out protesting for that many days in a row.
Yeah.
You know, people witnessed someone executed on TV. They watched a murder and they're like, wow, this is really happening.
Yeah.
And I just think it was brought to the forefront more than ever to the general overall consciousness. And people are like, all right, you know, this is not right. I think there's going to be fine. And there has been already, you know, there's been changes. There's been reform. Of course, we need all that. You know, it starts with education. You got to change the entire education system. Mm-hmm. Nobody's learning real education. Like in school, when you and I were in school, we didn't learn Black history. We learned a bunch of lies. And you got to undo a lot of that in order for people to start treating each other better.
So you go back to like when you were 18, when Rodney King was beaten, and you know, you were really big into hip hop culture then. And I'm sure there was a lot of protests. You know, I don't remember back. Again, I'm from Canada, so I'm not watching immersed in it as much as somebody in America. But how does, you know, you would almost say, well, like between 1992 and 2020, the changes were clearly not significant enough. How does one make sure that this does not just become like, oh, this is going to happen every 10 years. It's kind of, or, you know, 20 years. And if they're really committed to it, that they keep things going.
Yeah. I think obviously you have to vote, you have to make the right changes and then be aware of it. It's like anything else. I mean, you know, you and I are big into personal development and changing yourself. And so first, the first step is always with everyone being introspective. Where have I had blinders on? Where are the blind spots? Where can I work to improve things? Because at the end of the day, we're all hypocrites, you know, like maybe a vegan friends who drive a Jeep or something like that. Or you change your mind. You know, you love something that you used to hate. Or maybe you're super liberal, but you hate wearing the mask because the government's taking your liberties away. Well, that's the Republican, that's the right side. So everybody's, you know, a hypocrite and has these things that are incongruent. So you need to look at yourself first and foremost, obviously, then vote, be open, listen, educate, and don't forget about it. Like, you know, just putting up a black square or a hashtag or something isn't going to help. If it really matters to you, you got to move forward and stay with it, you know, protest, whatever it is that you can do. If you have a lot of employees, are all of them white? Be willing to make those changes.
So if we go back to that 1988 concert, you went to Public Enemy with your mom. You were the only white people there. We went in what, like 2008 or something like that, or maybe
it
seemed like everybody was white at that concert.
Right. Yeah.
But you got the shout out from Chuck D, and you know, you've been a huge fan of hip hop culture and, you know, all types of comedians, you know, obviously including many black comedians. And so how did, you know, just to go a little, try and get a little bit lighter now, like the comedy, everything from Seinfeld to Eddie Murphy to Chris Rock, how could that be a voice? And how, you know, I know you do some comedy. How is that something that can be a voice for people to move in the right direction without hopefully like connecting with people and not, separating people even more?
Yeah. I mean, I think Dave Chappelle is one of the most important voices of our generation. He won the Mark Twain Prize. Chappelle, and it's funny, Norm MacDonald, who I love, Norm. Didn't you and I watch that Norm special?
Yeah, we did watch the Norm thing.
Yeah. So Norm said, he goes, I knew that Dave Chappelle was going to evolve to be as good or better than Richard Pryor. He goes, I didn't know, but now I think he's evolving to become MLK, which is crazy. Not that Dave wants that, but I think there is somewhat of a responsibility, right? So Dave put out that 846 a few weeks ago, and within 24 hours, it had 25 million views. So people really do respect them. And
what was that?
And so it was 8.46 for the amount of time that the guy kneeled on George Floyd's neck. And it was just a 27-minute thing that they recorded. So there's no live shows or anything right now. Dave and Donnell Rawlings and Talib Kweli and Michelle Williams and a couple other people, Michael Shea, got together in a field in Ohio and did a whole stand-up show. And it seems like they did it like 5 or 6 days in a row. And Dave released 27 minutes of his set, where it basically came out and it was no comedy. It was just his kind of commentary, his social commentary. So there was, you know, a few laughs here and there. But yeah, I mean, I've said this for a long time. I think that stand-up comedy is the last bastion for free speech. And I'm not a huge fan of cancel culture where, you know, you're canceling people for something that they did 10, 20 years ago or something they're doing now.
Sure.
You know, you still have to, even though I'm highly offended by racist things, you know, there's, I don't know, everybody's got kind of get their own line. But I think, you know, for example, like Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel were both in hot water because they played black characters on Saturday Night Live and another show.
And Tina Fey recently in 30 Rock did some, you know, they had blackface on the show, which is ridiculous to think, like, how did you guys even let that happen 10 or 15 years ago?
Yeah.
But they're apologizing for something as well.
Yeah. And so the lines are always gray and blurry because Jamie Foxx came out and said, you have nothing to apologize for. You were doing a character. You were doing a spot on impression of Chris Rock. We did a show called Living Color, which a lot of people will remember, where we did people of every race, and we dressed up and we used makeup. So,
well, the first one ever was Eddie Murphy when he was the white guy going to the bank. Like,
yeah.
If you watch the best of Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night Live, that's like really great social commentary. My favorite part is where the guy just goes, no, like, just take the money, you know, he's the white guy in the bank and they're just giving him free money. Right. He's like, what? I just take this?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, but it can't be just the comedy, but, it is an opportunity, I think, to hopefully heal and bring people together on it. Obviously you have to have a lot of serious moments too, but hopefully people use it as a uniting thing there because I don't know. It's just, like you said, the opportunity to be seen as a hypocrite is very, very easy. And, you know, we've seen a lot of people blow up in the media in the last couple of weeks for really stupid things. I mean, obviously, yeah. It's not hard to identify stupid things and, you know, unacceptable behaviors, but hopefully people do the right things there. Now, going back to some of the experiences that you had, so, you know, your mother formed your ideas. How did those experiences, and maybe like there were some that were really formative for you, you know, in college, when you were training athletes, when you first opened your gym in 94, just all the shows that you've been to, every concert, every comedy show, man, I mean, you've really lived life, and now you're living in Southern California. What were some of the more formative experiences there where you see an opportunity for people to educate themselves? Like, what were some of the most educational experiences you've had as well?
I guess, during college, for example, it was the first time I was ever chased by the cops because we were drinking somewhere illegally. We were underage. I don't know. We weren't doing anything bad, but, my friends saw the cops and we started running and I was like, I don't even think we're doing anything bad, but that's just the fundamental difference of how a lot of black people are raised to view the police and how white people are raised to view the police.
I'll let you finish there in a second. I'd love to cut you off, Jim. Sorry. But so we do have a young black man who works for us and I interviewed him on my podcast a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, here I am like a naive old white fool. I ask him like, you know, was there a time or two when, you know, you felt uncomfortable and he just went on. There was the time I got thrown to the ground and handcuffed playing basketball. There was the time this. And he's only 23.
Wow.
And Like there was times like he was on his own college campus with his own college ID, and whoever pulled him over didn't believe that he went to school there. And it was just like, and he's a good, good kid. And, you know, he had at least a dozen incidences where that, you know, one, maybe like he at least got the guy who only threw him, like that's a horrible thing to say, but I mean, he could have got the guy who kneeled on him.
Right.
And so, you know, you put that picture up on your Instagram of, I hope I don't get killed for being black today. And it's like, that was, you know, I really was thrown off for the rest of the day because I'm like, I mean, there's like, I can't fix that personally, but it's horrible that that thing exists. And now I think one of the reasons why I want to follow up with you on this is like, I don't know what to do. And it becomes that, like, you obviously don't, like, nobody wants that for anybody, you know, being treated misproperly. And so, but it's like, well, now you have to go and fix institutional racism. Well, I'm not really, I don't even know where it starts.
So,
so you had in another one of your posts, like, you know, mobilize and stuff like that. So talk about the influence on that one and then what that means to you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even before this, I think a lot of us who are socially conscious and trying to get better, we want to see a brighter future for ourselves and for the world. Sometimes we get caught up in that, like, am I doing enough? Am I, you know, helping enough? And sometimes that could be overwhelming and you can get bummed out. And so I think that, again, going back to what I said before, if you can kind of just, you know, fix your own backyard, fix yourself, you know, how you treat people, and then be super conscious about everything you're doing. Like, I definitely have had blind spots. Do you, in your ads, do you only have white people? Do you only have white people in testimonials? Do you, like, you know, be aware of all this stuff. Do you, and there's a lot of times, again, going back to hypocritical, you say you believe in this, but then you support this cause or this company because you like how their food tastes or how their clothes look. Like, you know, you really got to be conscious. So you vote with your dollars. You vote, obviously, at the voting booth. You vote by how you treat people. And who you give people opportunities. You know, it's easy just to be a white person and be outraged and just talk about it, but what is that really going to do and help? Are you contributing to those causes? Like, you know, there's the Equal Justice Initiative, there's the NAACP, like there's causes that you can shift some of your yearly donations to. There's things that you can do. And I think just being more conscious of that and being aware of that and really evaluating, like, you want to talk about a company that takes a stand, Ben and Jerry's, holy shit. Yeah. Like, they do not care at all, which is amazing. And they stopped doing Facebook ads. That's probably going to affect their business. But because they said Mark Zuckerberg has to shut down this racist rhetoric on Facebook and not allow fake news and false information, all this thing to go on, or we're not supporting them anymore. So they canceled their Facebook ads. So are we all willing to do that? You know, are we willing to get uncomfortable? Mm-hmm. And then are we willing to, like, you know, there's, again, it goes so much back to education, reading the right books. We were not taught Black history in school. We were taught that Columbus discovered America and the Native Americans and white people had Thanksgiving together. No, we came here and it was genocide and we built this country on the backs of Black slaves. Like, we have to admit that. That doesn't mean that you're wrong or your dad's wrong or anything like that, but we have to admit the past and how do we move forward for a better future.
So I interrupted you on that story of where you were running, your friends were threatened by that situation. And then is that when you had some eye-opening conversations about just how things really are?
No, because I mean, that was the first time for me personally. I was aware of it because, again, of how I grew up and you know, all the books that I read and movies that I watched and things that I was super into. But it was the first time that I ran from the cops and I was like, oh, man. You know, having that firsthand experience. And then I got to just be even more aware, like, okay, every time we're all together and for example, you know, Kenny, right? Like I was,
we hang out with Kenny and you know, his wife and, you know, and you have all sorts of friends down that way. It's just normal to us, right?
Right. But let's say me, you and Kenny are together. When I get in the car to go home, we don't fear that we're not going to make it home. Kenny has that fear. Like Kenny's been face down multiple times. On the hood of his car, on the ground, you know, and almost every Black person I know has experienced that. I've never experienced that. So we could all be out having a good time, And then they have to go home like, man, I hope, you know, here's another one. Here's another good one. Like, I'm really concerned with the environment, right? Like, I get involved with causes and I donate. And then someone brought something up or something like, hey, are Black people not concerned about the environment that much? They don't seem to be as vocal about it as Leo DiCaprio and this and that. And somebody came out and said, no, that's not it. Well, of course, we have to live here too. We care about the environment. But our stress and anxiety on an everyday level is something that you can't even fathom because we're just trying to survive. Like, it's just our people are trying to survive. We would like to not get killed. We would like to not get, we would like to get home at the end of the day. And I was like, holy shit. Wow. Yeah. So, you know, you have to be willing to take a step back and evaluate, you know, your privilege, your priorities, things like that.
But then that's where I get lost. I'm like, oh yeah, that sucks. And I wouldn't want that to happen to anybody. And then there's like this huge gap in between. Well, what now? That's where, I mean, that's why I'm having this conversation. You know, Caleb, who works for me, you know, the gentleman that is on my team, you know, he suggested a couple of books. And so I've got the books and I'm reading, but I'm still like, you know, obviously, and here in Canada, it's certainly a problem, but it's not the same magnitude of problem. And so it's like, where does one start?
Yeah. I don't know. And that's the thing. I don't have all the answers and I don't know. I mean, and I think that it can only lead to overwhelm. And I've done this a lot in my life where I'm like, well, I'm not doing as much as these guys on the wall here, like, and then get bummed out about it. But if you can do a hundredth of that, you know, again, if you could just start, it's like with anything else, right? You just have to start, you know, with yourself and what you do and be willing to speak up. Like, you know, if you see something, you got to say something, you got to, and you know, as well as anyone from all the personal development that you've done, that you can lead people to believe something different, not by being preachy and things like that. Like, there's a way, there's, you know, there's a psychology to it. And that's one of the things that's always made me proudest of, all the work I did with college and high school athletes. Like, I had a lot of kids come in from really racist families and say some things, and I would let them know immediately, that doesn't fly here. Say it one more time, you're out of here. And then eventually those kids evolved. And I looked at it as my job to educate those kids and you know, to have everyone just be equal and things like that. And I mean, we can all do that in some small way in our own lives.
Well, it seems like, you know, like, why were you on this path? It was your mother. And why were those kids on their path? It was because of, you know,
right,
their family influence, and their family was influenced from the generation before and before. Now, you must have some clients, friends, readers who would not be as open-minded as you. What lessons do you share with them? How do you get into the conversation, share any stories, or just like challenge them? Like, what's, and what works? Because, I mean, a lot of those people are ingrained. I mean, look at the stupid stuff that happens in NASCAR with, like, you know, the one guy speaking out and then some of the retaliation towards him. It's like, it's unbelievable. It's like, you can't make that up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you say to some, like, what do you say to those kids that were set in their ways? I mean, obviously, aside from, you know, smarten up.
Yeah. Again, I think, like anything else, it comes down to, you know, Bedros talks about this all the time. You've talked about this. You know, you get what you tolerate and you accept. If over time you let it be known, and you can't be rough and abrasive because people don't respond well to that, but you get what you tolerate. People treat you a certain way based on your actions. You know, if you have rules for your life, if you have boundaries, you know, you talk about saying no. It's no different here, that people would not make a racist comment around me. They wouldn't do things because they know I don't tolerate it. And slowly by osmosis, like, I don't want to say on the air, but I have a friend who, you know, who, we weren't friends. We were just colleagues and happened to be in the same place a lot early on, you know, years ago. And he said racist stuff a lot. And I would just slowly over time let him know, hey man, that's not acceptable. That's not acceptable. And, you know, introduce him to different things and bring, non-white people around or whatever. And, you know, just by seeing that, you know, you lead by example, not just by preaching. And so just by seeing that, I think you could help people. And again, it's really nuanced. It's really, a lot of it is, again, back to, you know, I keep harkening back to personal development stuff, like, but
It is personal development.
It is, because it comes back, like, some of the best books, obviously read, you know, the autobiography of Malcolm X and these books about racism and whatnot. But if you read How to Win Friends and Influence People and Influence and 50 Ways to Be Influential and like all those kinds of things, that's going to help you in changing people's minds. It helps change people's mind when we're trying to help them build their business or build their body or whatever. It could help change their minds about how they view people with a different skin color.
So you live in Santa Monica, which obviously is a very, you know, anybody who knows the United States, it's one of the most liberal places in the country, I would guess. I may be making the wrong assumption, but so what do you see on the community level there that's helpful? And then, you know, how, compare that and contrast that to what your mom is seeing back in Jersey these days.
Well, crazy. Yeah. So it's way more liberal here. I mean, you know, I guess the stereotype is the Northeast is very liberal, but the things she's telling me are crazy and it's driving her insane. You know, some of the comments people are making to her and the arguments she's getting in and getting super
like
frustrated.
Like what are people?
Just ignorant racist stuff, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. Getting still upset when still. Yeah. Yeah. And again, some of these people are older, yeah. Which still isn't an excuse. You know, sometimes you kind of make it an excuse. Well, oh, that's the way they were. They don't know any better. I still don't think that's an excuse, but it's more understandable than someone who's 32 saying that, at least in my mind it is.
Yeah.
But she's letting herself get sucked into this rabbit hole. So I'm having to do the same thing I would do with a coaching client or whatever, saying, look, how is that going to help? You know, you got to just do things differently, remove yourself from that situation. Here we're seeing reform already. We're seeing, you know, we've already had police reform here. They're already asking for the Santa Monica chief of police to be removed because of some, you know, things she did and didn't do. There's been a ton of protesting and yeah, I mean, it is a super liberal place. So I think we're seeing things move forward. That's what's exciting to me is, you know, when all these things happen, you know, from Rodney King to Breonna Taylor, always like, we don't see a lot of change, but now we're seeing change.
Okay.
And, you know, I honestly think it's important for people to stay in the streets and stay protesting. And this has to remain at the forefront of the consciousness for things to change. But things are changing already, which is great.
Have you had any particular guests on your podcast that you've been talking to this about? Like maybe any shows that people might want to check out?
Not that I could think of. I mean, we have some lined up, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And then, so just for your show, it's still the Renegade Radio, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No. Awesome. Okay, cool. What show are you up to? You must be on 500 almost.
We're in the mid threes somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'll be on 500 if you want. So
yeah.
So let's transition a little bit. It seems like, is there anything else that you would suggest on this topic that if someone wants to educate themselves, someone wants to get involved, are there any more specific pieces of advice you would share here? Or well, shall we shift?
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, one thing that I've struggled with over the last month is the conversation I'm having is, how is this so new and shocking to all these white people? And I'm struggling with not getting in arguments and fights with people, which is the exact opposite of how I've lived my life for 10 years now. But it's just so, like, it drives me insane. So I've had to remove myself, you know, from viewing as much social media and news and stuff, because I got glued to this for the first month that happened. And I really haven't done that in years. But I would say, if you're so unaware of this, if this is so new, if it's so shocking, like, spend some time, you know, read books. Like we're saying, 13th is something that everyone should watch. 13th is a great documentary on Netflix.
And what is it about?
So the 13th Amendment basically ended slavery, but then there was a loophole in it so that tons of black people got arrested for petty crimes like loitering or jaywalking, and then were put back into slavery.
Oh.
And it talks about how police was formed as a slave catching organization. So if you look back, if you never knew these things, it's like, you know, it's kind of shocking, but, you know, watch things like that. Watch Do the Right Thing. Do the Right Thing, Spike Lee, 1989. It's amazing. The ending of it is exactly what happened to start all this. So it's, you know, Spike Lee, this is nothing new. You know, I've seen signs with people posting, if you're sick of hearing about racism, imagine how we feel experiencing it. Like, it's gone on for 400 years. And I get that if you're white and you live in a white neighborhood, you like never had to experience that, but it's a reality. Accept it. That's your fellow human being. What are you going to do about it? You know, I feel like Muhammad Ali said, service to others is the rent you pay for your room here on earth. So I think we all have to do something. What that is, what you're comfortable with, you know, that's what you have to decide. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like we all have a responsibility to each other. You know, we're not that different. We have to do something.
So now if we kind of switch, well, you know, we've got to talk about the other thing that's going on in the world, which is COVID, and, you know, how that plays into your future, your business. Be interested to hear, like, what lessons you have learned, whether it's about mindset of your clients, whether it's about the mindset of the people around you, other business owners that you know. What has been some of your biggest aha moments in the last couple of months up until, you know, late May, June 1st times? What were you thinking about then?
I mean, this year has certainly been interesting, to say the least. I think all of us were reminded of, you know, the most down I was for a long time prior to that was when Kobe died. That really affected me. And I think that reminded so many people of what not to take for granted. Yeah. You know, Kobe's young, he's a superstar, he's a hero in his prime. And so that reminded me about the importance. I think all of us reminded us, never take anyone for granted. You know, never take your relationships and your friends for granted. Spend more time with them and tell people you love them. And then I feel like it was like Mother Nature saying, all right, you guys are grounded. You've destroyed the environment. Now you're on punishment. You're grounded. You're put in your room, stay in your room for 2 or 3 months. And it's funny because like the air quality and everything in LA is better. Like that happened in so many places, like, you know, the water quality, the air quality got better. So it kind of reminded us of what we can do better and what we could stop doing. And we just had to sit there and think. And then I just took the time to think about, okay, what's really important to me? What is a waste of time? And so much of it is a waste of time, obviously. So much of the, you know, the mental energy, the money you spend, you know, you realize when you're home and just sitting there for 8 weeks or 12 weeks, well, I really don't need to spend all that money on that, or I don't need to do this, or I don't need to do that, or it takes me very little to be happy, you know. And then you start getting in that kind of minimalism Thoreau mind state, more of, okay, this is fine now, I'm getting used to it. What else can I cut out? What else is frivolous? What else is wasteful? So I was kind of doing that 80-20 evaluation on moving forward. How do I want to continue this? Because I kind of enjoyed that Spartan lifestyle and not having so many things. And what I realized is all the other stuff, the material things, even the things that I love, like going to concerts, the thing I miss most was my friends, being in physical proximity to my friends. Like that's the thing that matters the most at the end of the day. No matter what color they are, no matter what race, religion, creed, like I just love connecting with human beings. And so, you know, for me, that's really what it was. And I feel like a lot of clients and friends that I've talked to that are on the same wavelength, they were on, you know, a similar path, doing that same type of thing, like evaluating what's most important and what do I want to change going forward.
What do you see yourself changing going forward? You know, I was talking just before we started the show that you're hoping to have a live event in August. You know, that's a huge part of your business, and the people in your clients get so much out of being in those live events. So what else do you see? Do you see those things changing at all, doing more of them, or finding out another way to bring people together?
I want to continue to do as many events as possible. That was one thing I was reminded of, because the human connection is so important to me. As much as I tried to do a ton of Zoom stuff and all that, like that doesn't do it for me. I'm much better in person. You know, I feel better. I feel like I make a bigger impact. I feel like I help people more in person. So, and then not only do I want to continue to do more live events and push myself to get out there more and do things like that, I also, I defaulted to, and maybe you did the same, I don't know, or people, you know, did the same thing. At the beginning of quarantine, I was cool. Like I was having my daily routine and my schedule and all that. And then a few weeks into it, 4 or 6 weeks into it, I was like, oh my God, I'm just working 18 hours a day because I have nothing else to do. You know, all I'm doing is working and getting a workout in. And people are like, oh, what have you been watching during quarantine? I was like, I haven't even watched TV in like 3 weeks, but I'm not doing anything productive. Like I'm just working, you know, I was defaulting just to this old workaholic kind of grind and hustle. But, you know, as well as anyone, when you're working that much, you don't have that much balance. I'm not getting anything done. Like 6 of those hours were just wasted. I'm just like doing nonsense. So that was a good reminder of what you always talk about, you know, is having your perfect day schedule, even during quarantine, even, you know, you have to have your schedule, you have to have your routines, you have to turn off your electronics at a certain time. No matter what happens, you have to live, you know, according to your life rules, you have to have your non-negotiables, and then you're going to be stronger and you're going to be able to weather any storm and handle any adversity better if you do that on a regular basis. So I fell off a little bit and I kind of got down on myself for that. And I bounced back, but it was a good reminder. I think, you know, sometimes we stumble and you gotta get back up and it's a good reminder.
So did you end up then watching anything really good, you know, to put a little lightheartedness stuff in this show? Was there anything that you were just like, wow, that was really awesome. I got to go and, you know, recommend that to any other people.
Let's see. I watched every stand-up special on Netflix.
Any of them that stood out?
So many. I rewatched a bunch. I mean, I've rewatched all Chappelle's, which are amazing. I rewatched Sebastian Maniscalco's, which are amazing.
Did you watch the new Jerry one where he jumps out of the helicopter?
Yeah.
I watched that one. I thought the second half was really good, especially when he's talking about it, you know, his wife and how he, when she asks him something, he thinks, what's the exact opposite of what I want to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I'm trying to think. There was a series. I can't remember. We watched some series. I can't remember what it was called, though.
So good. So now you're back on track with your routine. So what does that perfect day look like for you? Like, what do you need in there in terms of blocks and in terms of scheduled recovery and regeneration?
Morning routine is... it's pretty similar. Like I have, people who know me know that, you know, I'm obsessed with music. So I get up in the morning, I meditate for 5 minutes. And then when I'm making coffee, I have kind of a pump up mix, that I always do kind of to program myself for the day. You know, I've told the story a million times. I was, you know, an insecure, shy, quiet kind of kid. So I play the music that, you know, again, hip hop's been the soundtrack to my life since 1984. So I play the music that gets me, you know, believing in myself and pumped up to be a superhero to dominate the day. So I'm making coffee, journal for maybe like 3 minutes. It used to be too much, but now it's like, three people, three things that I'm grateful for. Mm-hmm. And maybe just if I have any thoughts, you know, cause I find it helpful to look back and see how you were thinking and what you were feeling. And then I go right into the most important task, you know, whatever that might be for the day. And then I'll take the dogs out. Then I will train, and then I'll get into more kind of reactive instead of proactive work the second half of the day.
Uh-huh. And then have you found that you've been creating anything that you're excited to, that you think, or have you done anything, finished any projects that, you know, you wouldn't have had time if the world hadn't changed? Like, is there anything that you're able to finally get done there?
I wish I could say, yeah, I got some huge things done. I can't think of anything like massive. No.
So you're still just the same old Jay doing the good old things and making the impact, and that's what you plan on doing for the rest of your life, right, my man?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, Jay, thank you for a slightly, I just want to say this. I was really nervous about this call. Like for the last couple of days, I'm like, what am I going to ask him to properly articulate my struggles in knowing what to do? And but also be able to like not seem like a complete idiot, but also then to get good, valuable information for people so they can take away and make, you know, whatever decision they want to make of things, hopefully open some minds, hopefully give them ideas on how to start conversations with people. But it was, you know, it's a very important topic, and, you know, treating people equally is just, I mean, it's so obvious that that's how it should be done. So sometimes I don't get it when people are so, you know, different in their way of thinking. So is there anything else that with all the stuff that we've chatted about, maybe anything that's coming back to your mindset that like, yeah, there's, you know, I want to mention about this.
I think for, you know, to use myself as an example, again, where I say that, you know, we all do certain things that are kind of hypocritical of our actions or other thoughts we've had in the past. You know, for my whole life, any kind of racism, if you called a black person, an Asian person, a Spanish person, anything, something, I would have freaked out. But up until 10 years ago, and you grew up the same time as me, it was acceptable to make jokes like, oh, that's gay or whatever, things like that. And I wouldn't stand up and say, don't say that until 10 years ago. And so like we've all had, and I think that my point of that is it's okay. Like nobody's perfect. Everybody's flawed. Everybody's a hypocrite in some way. Just be aware, look back of like, hey, here's what I used to believe. Here's what I used to think. Like I put up a post this morning, like I used to hate dogs. I was terrified of dogs. And it's a pit bull kissing me and licking me. And if I listen to what people say about other living creatures, I would think that this pit bull is going to rip my face off. And that's what I thought. But you can unlearn anything. We could all unlearn anything. Like you said before, it's personal development. Like, why do you believe this? Because mom and dad said that? Because that's all you ever said? Like, there's other things. You have to be open to learning other perspectives and reading other things. And you can't just stay in your own box. And I think one of the best ways to learn, too, is to listen to somebody who's got the complete opposite view, right? Like we all want our view. Like we either watch CNN or we watch Fox or we do this or we that, but listen to people who have the complete opposite view and be like, yeah, I hear what you're saying, dude. And you can't, like, you're never going to change someone's mind by arguing. I mean, that's been since the dawn of time. People know you don't talk about politics and religion. You're not going to change someone's mind, but you can change someone's mind slowly over time. You know, again, it's, but you got to be willing to do the work.
That's a great place to leave off here, Jay. I mean, this is personal development for all of us. And so, Jay, thanks, my man. People can listen to you at Renegade Radio. Is that renegaderadio.com or just Renegade Radio on iTunes?
RenegadeRadioPodcast.com.
Okay, perfect. And then iTunes, Stitcher, all that good stuff. I mean, Jay, you've been leading the way since 92 or 94, whatever year it was. And you've been a good friend of mine since we first met in person in 2006, but also just by text messages and emails back all the way to 2003 or four. So thanks for being the big brother that I definitely have needed in my life many times, my man.
Oh, thank you so much, brother. I love you. I appreciate you.
All right. We'll talk to you again soon, my man.
All right. So thanks again to Jay. Usually he and I have awkward conversations, and this was only slightly different, I suppose. And usually they're a whole lot funnier and a little bit more open, lighthearted, I should say. But I learned a lot from Jay, and I'm going to continue to have this conversation with other people on the show while also talking about all the things that matter to you outside of the social issues, such as routines, habits, and success. All right. So let me know what you thought of today's show. Give me a 5-star review on iTunes and all the good platforms, and send me a message at Real Craig Valentine. Let me know what you thought of today's show, what you would have asked Jay, what you want me to ask somebody in the future. I really appreciate it. I really do. And I can't wait to hear from you soon.